Cuba has been in the news a lot lately, and I think our ties to that country go back to 1898, at least, in the Spanish-American War. And central to that conflict were Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders. And we're going to explore the iconic regiment, the Rough Riders and Teddy Roosevelt, with our guest, Mark Lee Gardner. Mark's new book is Rough Riders, Theodore Roosevelt, His Cowboy Regiment, and the Immortal Charge Up San Juan Hill. Mark, an authority on the American West, his books include To Hell on a Fast Horse and about Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett, and Shot All to Hell about Jesse James. So it's going to be a lot of fun today. How do you feel about Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders? What are your thoughts on the U.S.-Cuba relationship? Join in the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. That's the title of the page. And Mark Lee Gardner, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, you're welcome, Larry. I'm happy to be chatting about TR.
Oh, man, I tell you what. You certainly are an authority on the American West, and you've written many books and articles about it. You even sing about it. What is it that draws you to that time period?
Well, you know, it's so fascinating. I was born and raised in Missouri, and, you know, even as a kid, we would take family vacations. My parents would take me and my two sisters, and you know, my parents, we'd hit every fort and battlefield and historic house. And so there's just something about the West and its rich history and all those personalities and characters. And, you know, the Rough Riders was filled full of personalities from the West. So it was like right up my alley.
Well, and you know, Teddy Roosevelt, I don't know how many people have told me that their most fascinating and interesting president was Teddy Roosevelt. And the Rough Riders, and I'm not so sure that people, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people really don't know that very much about the Rough Riders and the charge up San Juan Hill. Actually, it was a charge up a couple of hills, as I read in your book.
That's right.
That he did, but talk about who were the Rough Riders and how did they come to be?
Well, when war was declared against Spain in 1898, Congress authorized an enlargement of the army. Our standing army of regulars was very small, mostly on the frontier. So they authorized over 100,000 men that could be enlisted, volunteers. But part of that legislation authorized three regiments of mounted riflemen that were to be raised in the American West. And the thinking behind this was that these particular regiments, and they were cavalry, they would be composed of cowboys and frontiersmen who were supposed to be natural crack shots and expert horsemen. And so most of the Rough Riders were organized or enlisted in New Mexico Territory, Arizona Territory, Oklahoma Territory, and Indian Territory. And while there were a few cowpunchers in there, there were also men from towns like Santa Fe and Albuquerque and Phoenix. There were typesetters, there were actors, teachers, miners, railroaders, all different, every type of job you can think of. And then on top of that, TR enlisted a lot of his buddies in the East. So we had Ivy Leaguers and we had polo players, champion tennis players, and millionaires who were part of this regiment as well.
And what was Teddy Roosevelt's status at that time?
Well, you know, that's what's so interesting about him. He was a bureaucrat. He was, at that time, Assistant Secretary of the Navy. He was 39 years old. There was no need for him as a 39-year-old man to join and fight in Cuba. But he felt that since he had pushed for the war, he was really objected to the fact that there was this old world country in Cuba with a colony. He felt that he should be there fighting, you know, for the, you know, in the war that he had helped promote.
Well, it's certainly a riveting book, and it's packed with, you have this book packed with so much detail. Well, I mean, really interesting detail about so many people who were involved. It had to take you a long time to get all this information, and what were your best resources?
Well, my best resources were the letters of the Rough Riders themselves, and they were wonderful because many of these had never been seen before, and I owe that to technology and the Internet. You know, in the last few years, millions of newspaper pages from the 19th century have been scanned, and they are available on various websites. The Library of Congress has one of the best. It's called Chronicling America. But you can, you know, you can have a parameter of just 1898. You can search by Rough Rider. And these guys, they wrote letters to their parents, to their sisters, to their aunts and uncles. And these family members would run down to the newspaper office and hand it to the editor, and who was glad to publish a letter from Cuba, especially giving these, you know, very graphic details of the battles and descriptions of their leaders, T.R. and Leonard Wood. And, you know, other historians have not been able to see these because they just weren't available. They didn't know they existed, unless you spent, you know, years in front of a microfilm reader trying to find them. So my best source were these letters from the men themselves, as well as the letters and diary of T.R.
Well, I was just amazed to me that the details. Sometimes those details are so interesting. There's small things that happen. Sometimes, how did he ever find that? It's really, really interesting to me. And, you know, you tell the regiment story. Roosevelt, he's just such a bigger-than-life personality, and that really shines through in the book. What was it about the guy that inspired such loyalty from his men and drew people to him?
Well, I mean, there are several things, but everything you said about him, I mean, you can use any adjective to describe him. But I remember one Rough Rider, which I thought, you know, really summed it up. He said, "He's the most magnetic man I ever met. He was so charismatic, and he was so decisive. I mean, he was quick to make decisions, which could be a bad thing, you know, sometimes too. But, you know, but he also, I mean, he endeared himself to his men. You know, he did not talk down to his men. You know, he was their officer, but he led by example. He was the hardest worker. You know, he was always, you know, in Cuba, he was doing everything he could to get supplies and food to his men who were desperately in need of rations. But it just everything he did and little things that they noticed. I mean, he would walk around the training camp in San Antonio, you know, kind of spouting out loud the commands for their cavalry drill. I mean, he was learning, too. And they saw this, you know, he didn't secret himself away and study up. I mean, his men saw him practicing and teaching himself. So there were just lots of examples like that that inspired them.
Certainly. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. What are your thoughts about Teddy Roosevelt and the Spanish-American War and maybe about military, historic military battles? I always enjoy reading them. Do you enjoy reading those kinds of things? Call in 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Can you set the stage in Cuba? What was going on that provoked Congress to demand Spain leave and that sort of thing?
Well, there were two big things. One thing had been happening for years. You know, the Cubans had been fighting for their independence, Cuba Libre, against Spain. And this was a very sympathetic cause in the United States. I mean, you know, we had fought and won our independence, and here was a country just off our shore that was doing the same thing. And you know, something that really made that much larger and much more real and horrible were the atrocities that the news was getting back the United States. Spain had rounded up a lot of these you know, families of rebels and put them in these towns. They were really concentration camps, and the people that lived there were called the reconcentrados, and they were starving to death by the thousands, and this news was getting back to the United States. And then the real trigger point was the explosion of the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor in February of 1898, when 266 American officers and men lost their lives. The battleship Maine was in Havana because there had been some anti-American protests, and it was there, you know, as something to kind of, you know, lend assistance if Americans needed it. So, of course, when it exploded, most Americans blamed the Spaniards. There was an investigation. Navy boards determined it was an external device, which meant it was some kind of submarine mine, which just lended credence to, this was some dastardly act by the Spaniards. But I should say the Spaniards had their own investigation and determined it was an internal device or internal explosion. And really today we still debate exactly what caused that explosion, but what it did really cause was the war with Spain.
Yeah, it's just from your own research, do you think the Maine was attacked by Spaniards, or do you think not?
I think not, because to me it's like that would be such a provocative act. Why would you do it? Yeah, Spain would not want a war with the United States. Now, it might have, you know, you could theorize that, well, maybe some Cubans did that to provoke a war. But we do know from research that the powder magazine was very close to the boiler's engine room, and, you know, there could have been some kind of a spark or something that set that off internally. So to me, it just, the simplest explanation is that it was an internal explosion. That's my feeling.
Yeah. And how much influence did Roosevelt, you know, he's the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, how much influence did he have on the U.S. decision to intervene?
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes it's a little out of proportion. I mean, it wasn't just Roosevelt. I mean, there were congressmen, there were American citizens that were pushing for war after the explosion of the Maine. Roosevelt did suspect that Spain had something to do with it. At least that's what he wrote in letters that I came across initially. So, I mean, he did push for it. Leonard Wood pushed for it. In fact, one of the funny things that I mentioned in the book is that, Leonard Wood was President McKinley's personal physician and tended to McKinley's wife, who was suffering quite a bit from various maladies. And anyway, whenever he saw Leonard Wood, President McKinley would say, "Well, have you and Theodore declared war yet?" And he would say, "No, sir, but we believe you should start in that direction."
Oh, man. And then they put together this volunteer regiment. What is a volunteer regiment, by the way? Is it they're paid?
Yeah, they're paid. I mean, you know, they're volunteers. They're enlisted for just a certain amount of time. But you know, they're not veterans. They're not regulars who joined up and you're actually part of the official, you know, U.S. Army. A volunteer regiment, is enlisted for a war for a specific reason. So they tend to be, you know, they can be all ages of men and all occupations, or they're not really necessarily have come up through a training camp or anything like that to prepare them for war. And, you know, most of the Civil War was fought by volunteers, volunteer regiments. But anyway, they were looked down upon generally by the regulars. And, of course, the Rough Riders had a tough row to hoe, because not only did the regulars, you know, not think much of volunteers, but this particular volunteer regiment was getting all the attention and all the media, and it was the most famous regiment in its day, and it's probably one of the top two famous regiments of all time.
And we got to take a quick break. Hang in there, Mark. We'll be back after this quick look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest today has written a new book that gives us an up-close and personal view of the Rough Riders, Teddy Roosevelt, and that charge up San Juan Hill. Mark Lee Gardner, author and authority on the American West, with some wonderful books prior to this one as well. What are your thoughts on the Spanish-American War? What do you hear, or what do you think about when you hear the term Rough Riders? Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And again, our guest, Mark Gardner. And Mark, boy, there's so many things that we can talk about. The battle itself and the fights were absolutely amazing. You know, a lot of people got killed.
Oh, yeah. The Rough Riders took the heaviest casualties in the cavalry division. And I think, you know, something that we may be surprised to your listeners is that the Rough Riders weren't the only regiment in Cuba. You know, there were 17,000 men. But, you know, as we talked about earlier, I mean, they got all the attention because of who they were and because of TR. And because this really was a direct line to TR's presidency, you know, it's what we remember most about the Spanish-American War. I mean, most people can remember the Rough Riders and San Juan Hill, but that's about it.
Yeah, and it seemed as though Roosevelt almost had a yearning for war.
Yeah, he really did. And it started years before the Spanish-American War erupted. You know, there were many international incidents that it looked like there might be some kind of a conflict, and Roosevelt was the first one to write a connection or a friend and say, hey, you know, I want to get into this regiment in case there's war, or I wanted to, you know, I can raise a bunch of cowboys out here in the Dakotas and we can go fight. And I think that stems from, you know, he grew up as a boy in the Civil War, and a lot of young men of the 1890s, they didn't have a great war. They didn't have a battlefield experience, and they did. They yearned for that.
And you know, as I'm reading your book and thinking about this, the time between Roosevelt and Wood getting permission to put their regiment together and then setting foot in Cuba really didn't seem like, frankly, a long enough time to be prepared for fighting.
No, you know, it really wasn't. I mean, Roosevelt was offered the command of the regiment by the Secretary of War, and he turned it down. And he said, I just don't have the time to become an experienced commander of a regiment of 1,000 men. He said, give me a few weeks. But in the meantime, make Leonard Wood my buddy, colonel, and I'll be lieutenant colonel. And then, you know, by the time the big assault on the San Juan Heights occurs on July 1st, 1898, Wood has been bumped up, and all of a sudden Roosevelt is in command of his regiment.
Yeah, and they faced, maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the difficulties they faced in just getting ready and the actual process of getting there and everything.
Yeah, you know, it's there was a real rush for, you know, all these volunteers, and all there were many volunteer regiments, and everybody was, you know, needing uniforms, they were needing weapons, and of course the Rough Riders, having somebody like TR who had big connections in DC, they got the most advanced carbines, just like the regulars are using. It's called the Krag Jorgensen carbine, fired a 30-40 round, used smokeless powder. All the other volunteer regiments got Trapdoor Springfield, the same kind of weapon Custer's men used as a little bighorn, and it used black powder. But, you know, the other thing was, you know, the uniforms. Most of the regiments had these heavy wool uniforms that were just killers in the Cuban jungle. But Leonard Wood said, no, we want these canvas, brown canvas fatigue uniforms, and that's what they got. So they, you know, they were able to get supplies and things that other regiments couldn't, and in a very rapid manner. But then, you know, they trained in San Antonio for just a few weeks. They were shipped by rail to Tampa, Florida. And then once they got to Tampa, Florida, it was a complete mess. There weren't enough ships, so the Rough Riders become Rough Marchers. They don't get to take their horses to Cuba. Only Roosevelt and the officers got to take horses. And plus, they had to leave four troops of the regiment behind. So not all the Rough Riders got to go.
It's amazing. And those uniforms, by the way, are pretty cool uniforms, even today as I look at Teddy Roosevelt on the cover of your book.
Yeah, they're very cool. You know, what the Army had just adopted was a khaki summer, you know, weight canvas. And Roosevelt, of course, his uniform, officers had to buy their own uniforms. Well, Roosevelt got his from Brooks Brothers in New York. And, of course, since he, you know, and he got the khaki, most of the men weren't issued those standard khaki uniforms until they were about to leave Cuba. They had the fatigue brown canvas, and they actually had woolen shirts that were blue, and, you know, one Rough Rider said they were hot as hell, and I'm sure they were. But, yeah, those later photographs of them wearing those khaki uniforms, they're very spiffy, and they had yellow collars because yellow designated the cavalry. In fact, some of the men called them their canary coats.
And the press, what influence did the press have on between the two armies, their artilleries and their ways of fighting?
Oh, you mean the media?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the Rough Riders sold papers, many correspondents trailed or, you know, rode right along with these guys. And it were the most famous correspondents of the day. I mean, Richard Harding Davis, and he was a friend of Roosevelt, Stephen Crane. There were many correspondents that were following the Rough Riders. And again, they got the lion's share of the coverage. Even though the Battle of San Juan Heights had about 8,000 officers and men on the American side involved and a few hundred Rough Riders.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking about you as you were describing the disorganization of just sort of getting over there and the fact that our leaders were not necessarily prepared for this. You wonder, how did we manage to win?
Well, you know, Roosevelt would say, and several of the soldiers. In fact, one of my favorite quotes, one of the Rough Riders, he talked about, you know, the Spaniards had superior arms. They had Mauser rifles, which were actually better than the carbines. They had better positions, and entrenched positions. But he said the one thing that was a flaw with the Spaniards was they could not stand a charge. So these you know, furious charges at the, you know, in fact, the Spaniards, this is another thing I thought was so interesting. One of the officers said, you know, when we fight the Cubans, they fire once and they retreat. But, you know, we shoot at you once and you keep charging. You know, nobody's done that before. So Roosevelt said it was kind of a troop commander's, a lieutenant's and a captain's fight. I mean, the big generals were not on the battlefield. Shafter, the commander, was sick. You know, he was over 300 pounds, suffered from gout. And so you had men, you know, using initiative like Roosevelt that were leading these men forward and fighting the fight themselves without direct orders from their superiors.
Yeah. And there are many different versions of the charge up San Juan Hill. And actually, the charge up Kettle Hill, the other first that happened before that, I thought was really interesting as well.
Yeah, there's, you know, one of the things that really stuck out for me, and I wasn't an expert when I started on this. I mean, I was a Roosevelt. I had an affection for him as a child. But some of the things I found that he did, I thought were incredible. You know, he carried a revolver that had been salvaged from the battleship Maine. And near the top of Kettle Hill, two Spaniards fired at him and his orderly. Well, Roosevelt quickly raises a revolver, fires two shots, and kills one of the Spaniards in just yards from him. And he was so proud of that.
He sent an old bag.
A letter. He wrote his friend, "Did I tell you that I killed a Spaniard with my own hand?"
This is absolutely amazing. So describe or kind of set the stage for this this whole battle, this part of the battle.
Sure. Well, the whole reason for taking San Juan Heights and the key to this part of the war was the Spanish fleet that was holed up in Santiago's harbor. The U.S. Navy couldn't get at it because there was a narrow inlet and it was had mines and chains. So they decided that they needed a land force that if it took the city of Santiago, then that fleet would be at the mercy of the American Army and the Navy that was waiting outside. So the San Juan Heights overlooks the city of Santiago from the east. So the key to taking Santiago is getting those hills. So General William Shafter masses his army in front of San Juan Heights, and on the morning of July 1st, 1898, they make a very kind of haphazard. There's delays, and Roosevelt, you know, he's waiting for an hour for orders. A lot of his men are getting shot to pieces there in front of Kettle Hill. And finally, he gets the order to move forward. But when he moves forward, they run into the regulars. They're supposed to support the regulars, but they hadn't gotten the orders to assault. And so Roosevelt's going through their lines, and he says, "Well, if you're not going to charge, let my men through." Well, of course, as soon as they all start going through, everybody joins them, and then they're all charging up Kettle Hill.
Yeah, and that hill was, as you say, was entrenched. I mean, the Spanish were in a pretty good position.
Yes, they were. They were entrenched around a fortified house. A lot of times in the literature, you'll see they'll say blockhouses, and there were real blockhouses in Cuba, but mostly along San Juan Heights and Kettle Hill, these were haciendas or houses that had been fortified with trenches and boarded up windows. And in fact, the hacienda on top of Kettle Hill had been a sugar refinery, and the kettles for refining the sugar is how it got its name.
There are, as I said, there are very many versions of this, and there are so many side stories. The Buffalo Soldiers, who were the Buffalo?
Yes.
Yeah, what role did they play in the battle?
They played a very important role. They were African Americans. The army was segregated at that time. So when the Rough Riders are enlisted, there are no African Americans in the Rough Riders. But there are African American regulars, and it's the 9th and 10th Cavalry who are in the Cavalry Division, and the Rough Riders are fighting alongside. And you know, one of the stories from the book is the Rough Riders start going up Kettle Hill. They encounter a bunch of African-American Buffalo soldiers, and one of the Buffalo soldiers, "What are you doing?" And one of the Rough Riders says, "We're going to take that hill," and says, "If you want, join in with us." And the Buffalo soldier responds, "Well, I'll be damned if a Rough Rider is going to get ahead of me." You know, and so at one point, Roosevelt's actually in charge of, he's leading both white regulars, Rough Riders, and Buffalo soldiers on top of Kettle Hill, and then eventually on the charge on San Juan Hill, he has a whole mixed-up bunch of dismounted cavalry behind him on that charge as well.
And he's urging, as you're writing about, he's urging people up the hill, and there was such a mess. Normally, he would have been sort of at the rear.
Yes. Yes, that's right. A colonel would be expected to be behind the regiment and where he could observe what's happening, issue orders to orderlies to, you know, for whatever actions he desires. But the lines in front of him kept getting bunched up, and so he would ride up to, you know, to get some separation, and he would do this with each succeeding line until eventually he was at the front, where of course he wanted to be anyway. You know, he's not going to want to be at the back. And so, yeah, he's at the forefront with his men, and he's one of the very first ones to get to the top of Kettle Hill, which is why he gets shot at. If he'd been behind his regiment, he never would have been shot at by, you know, the Spaniards there at the top. But, you know, that was his ideal of an officer. Lead your men. And, you know, that's why he was nominated for the Medal of Honor. He was brave and heroic at every point in that battle.
You wonder, you know, here's this guy on a horse.
Yes.
He's obviously a leader, and guys are getting shot all around him. At one point, you know, he's urging some guy to get up and get going, and so the guy stands up and is immediately shot.
Yes.
You wonder how fate
well,
there.
What happens is that because he's one of the few men on a horse, he's drawing the enemy fire. And so, unfortunately, the guys that are close to him are getting hit and not Roosevelt. And that's exactly what happened to that man he told, you know, who was afraid. He said, stand up, you know. He said, look at me, I'm on horseback, and you know, I'm not afraid. And, of course, that guy stands up and he gets killed.
And there are many acts of heroism in your book, which I just really riveting reading. Which stand out to you?
The one that stands out most to me, Roosevelt stood out, you know, greatly. But the one that stood out most to me, the Buffalo Soldier was returning from a field hospital. I'm sorry, not a Buffalo Soldier. One of the Rough Riders was returning from a field hospital to the front line along this creek that they were lined up against. And this Buffalo Soldier goes tumbling into the stream, and he's been hit. And the Rough Rider goes up to him, and this guy's bleeding profusely from his neck, and he puts his thumb over the wound. And then every time he takes his thumb off, of course, blood comes gushing out. So he stays there for an hour, you know, until help can come. And you know, he's missing out on the charge. He's missing out on the glory. But he saves the life of this African-American Buffalo Soldier. And I just to me, that really stood out, you know, considering the racism of the time and the segregation, and that he saved this black man's life, and I just thought that was amazing.
I would definitely agree with you on that. I mean, and Roosevelt himself, I mean, there was a reason he was nominated for the Medal of Honor.
Oh yes, yeah, One regular officer, actually in a report after the war was over, said he really credited Roosevelt mostly for the success of the day, especially on that part of the assault, Kettle Hill, and then their portion of San Juan Hill. But he was so brave and so in the front, and some, you know, you could also call it foolhardy as well. But, you know, one Rough Rider wrote later to his parents, he said, if we have another battle like the last one, I expect Roosevelt to fall. It really was a miracle that he wasn't hit and killed, and it was a miracle that he didn't get yellow fever or malaria. You know, another Rough Rider wrote, after Roosevelt was elected governor of New York a few months later, and there was a lot of talk that, well, he was just fighting, you know, for political advancement and that kind of thing. And one Rough Rider said, well, if he was going for a governorship, it was a governorship in hell, because nobody courted death more than Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, it just amazing. And how many Spanish? We have about 8,000 troops charging the hill, if I'm not mistaken. How many were on the Spanish side?
Well, that's the amazing part of it. There only were probably between 1,500 and 2,000 Spaniards on top of San Juan Hill. And San Juan Hill is a long ridge, by the way. You know, the commander of the Spanish forces, he had several thousand men. But they were all spread out around the Santiago Harbor and protecting different points of the city itself. And had he concentrated his forces in front of the Americans on San Juan Heights, I think it would have been a much different story, because they inflicted, just those few amount of men inflicted incredible casualties on the Americans. So I think, you know, the Rough Riders, in many ways, and their counterparts, were very, very fortunate the way the battle transpired.
Yeah, and I forget, how many Americans lost their wounded and dead?
Well, I'll just give you an example. You know, for the Rough Riders, you know, Roosevelt enters the fight, I believe it's with something around, you know, around 400 or so men, and he suffers a 37% casualty rate. There were 86 killed and wounded of the Rough Riders. So, I mean, basically, you know, one in three men are going down, and that was the highest of any of the, well, Roosevelt was so proud of it. No other cavalry regiment suffered those kinds of casualties. What he's saying is that we were always where the heaviest fighting was because we lost the most men.
Oh, man. And, of course, that was really the pinnacle of the war, winning that.
It really was, yeah. I mean, the Spanish fleet, they end up, you know, while the Americans have the San Juan Heights, they make a run for it out to the open sea, and it's destroyed by the American Navy. The Rough Riders and all the other troops in Cuba, they're really suffering higher casualties from disease, from typhoid fever, malaria, yellow fever. So they're shipped back in August to Long Island, New York, Montauk Point. Well, while they're sailing back to almost to New York, the word comes that a peace agreement has been signed with Spain. And so the war is over. The Rough Riders are not going to see any more action. They're mustered out in September. So they are only involved for like 19 weeks, you know, they're soldiers.
But not all out of proportion, but I mean, the acclaim was tremendous following that war.
It really was.
Rough Riders.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, they, incredible media coverage. People loved to read the stories about the Rough Riders because there were real cowpunchers and there were real Southwesters and there were real heroes. And it led to all kinds of great things for Theodore Roosevelt. Even before he got back from Cuba, there was talk of nominating him to run for governor of New York. And indeed, in November, he's elected governor of New York.
Yeah, it was. And even, as I recall you reading, the style of the hats, for example, became
yes. yeah.
quite there was a- popular.
Yes, the merchants were very quick to take advantage of this popular acclaim, and so for the ladies they had the Rough Rider hat and available in various different furs and nutria and beaver and that kind of thing, and these guys were the toast of the town in New York City. Wherever they went, people were buying food and drinks for them, and they were definitely celebrities.
It's interesting to me that the whole politics kind of around the fact that he was not then at that time presented a Medal of Honor. He certainly seemed to deserve it.
He did deserve all his commanding officers recommended him for the Medal of Honor. But, you know, there were several things that were working against him. One was is that he had gotten so much attention out of proportion to the other regular units. He had rankled the Secretary of War, the guy that offered him the colonelcy. He had written a public letter to the press describing the conditions and of the health of the men, which was awful, and urging that they be sent somewhere to recuperate. And this was an embarrassment to the War Department, like the whole war had been an embarrassment. And this was just, the straw that broke the camel's back, essentially. So Secretary of War Alger definitely did not want Roosevelt awarded a Medal of Honor, and it took several decades for Roosevelt to finally get that recognition. It wasn't until 2001 that he received the Medal of Honor in the Roosevelt Room in the White House.
President Clinton, who was a huge Teddy Roosevelt fan.
Yes, and President Obama is a huge TR fan.
Well, I'm telling you, Mark, this is a fascinating book. I thank you so much for taking time to be with us today to talk about it. Next time you've got when you have a new book, let me know.
Okay, well, thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Mark Lee Gardner is author of Rough Riders, Theodore Roosevelt, His Cowboy Regiment, and The Immortal Charge Up San Juan Hill. Quite a story. And quite a group of men and quite a man who became president as well, Teddy Roosevelt. A very interesting book. We have several rebroadcasts coming up. I'll be in Canada playing in a golf tournament, as a matter of fact, in the next several days. And so we have some of our very best interviews that we've done over the past year or so, and you'll be hearing them next week. And I will be back on the day after Memorial Day. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.